Welcome to Catholics Across the Aisle, the podcast of the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, offering commentary on public policy and civic life. This is Michael Sheedy, Executive Director of the Conference. Welcome to another episode of Catholics Across the Aisle, podcast of the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. My name is Michael Sheedy. I'm joined today by Rita Galliano, who is the Executive Director of the Florida Pregnancy Care Network, or FPCN. Rita, it's great to have you today.
Thank you, Michael. I am thrilled to be here with you today.
For listeners who are not yet familiar with the work of FPCN, why don't you tell us a little bit about the organization?
Absolutely. As you know, the program was founded in 2005 and was funded in 2006, in large part by the efforts of folks at the conference and some really dedicated, passionate folks in the community here in Florida. So we were funded and then had an appropriation of about $2 million, which grew in 2016 to $4 million. And we were codified in statute in 2018 with a recurring appropriation. And at that time, wellness services were added to the services that we can provide for clients, which we're just thrilled about. And I can talk to you more about that. But our mission, as you know, is to enable women in need to carry their pregnancies to term and to choose parenting or adoption.
Neat. That's what a great mission. What an important mission. Mm-hmm. You alluded to some of the different services that have been added over time, but what would you say are the main services that the members of the network are providing today?
Well, primarily pregnancy support services. So, you know, a woman who finds herself in an unplanned pregnancy will show up to a pregnancy support center and start off first and foremost with a pregnancy test. And then the results of that test will determine, you know, what kind of counseling she receives. So if she's pregnant, then she receives counseling, childbirth counseling, and then she can continue those services. Now, our program doesn't provide for ultrasound, but most of the centers will provide a free ultrasound for the client, and which is a beautiful opportunity for her to be able to see, you know, her unborn child, and is often very helpful in her choice. But so the pregnancy test, if the pregnancy test is negative, then the client has the opportunity to receive what we now call sexual risk avoidance counseling, which is oftentimes referred to as abstinence counseling. So we have other ways to help her. And oftentimes that's the client that we might refer for a wellness visit if she's not insured, so that she can see a doctor to make sure that she's in good health.
Now, Rita, this is a statewide network. How many centers would you say comprise the network?
We have about 100 site locations. It usually lingers around 100. I think right now, maybe closer to 98 locations throughout the state of Florida. So some of those are centers that have multi sites. So for example, in Miami, Heartbeat of Miami, I think currently has 5 locations. Same with in the St. Petersburg area with Foundations of Life.
So it's nice. It's a very extensive network, and yes, it's pretty much statewide, and people can get services across Florida.
That's okay. Right.
Okay. Well, Rita, you've been at this job, I forget how long, but how long have you been at it? And what do you like the most about what you're doing there?
It's been 2.5 years, which is amazing to think that 2.5 years has gone by so quickly. And, you know, while most of what I do is behind the scenes, not directly with clients, we do visit the centers. And I had one opportunity where I was at a center when a client was there. She put her baby down and the baby crawled right up to me. And so I looked over at the mom, you know, is it okay? And she went, absolutely. And so I picked up this baby. That doesn't happen all the time, but it was so nice to hold a baby. And obviously, those are the precious moments. But for me, it's really being able to support the centers in their mission to the client. And the client stories never cease to inspire me. I am always awed. I am never tired of, you know, it's not, oh, here's another client story. Every client story is unique. Every client story inspires hope. It's just amazing. And just this week, I learned about a client who was a homeless woman living in the woods and somehow made her way to a pregnancy center. And the staff are just so dedicated and so committed, and so passionate. They worked with her to provide the ultrasound. They helped, called all over the state to get her a place to live. We have 5 centers in the network that are maternity homes. Mm-hmm. And they were able to find a place for her. They're not, it's not easy to find a room, but they were able to find a room, and volunteers drove 2.5 hours to get her where she needed to be. And so those are the kinds of things that inspire me. And just seeing women just stirred, their maternal instincts stirred, particularly when they see, you know, their unborn child on that ultrasound, is it's a huge deal for them.
So the clinics that comprise the network, they really are about an important pro-life mission. You know, they're, you might say, trying to provide just an alternative to women who are thinking about abortion. And I would think that you and folks who serve in these centers have given some thought as to why women really find themselves contemplating the possibility of abortion. What would you say are the most common reasons people or women really think about abortion from the other side, I guess?
So. Yeah, I think it's really boils down to fear. And that could be fear of a number of things, maybe fear of poverty, fear of financial hardship, fear of changing their life plans. You know, now they're rethinking their future, or maybe they conclude that they don't have a future because this baby has now entered the picture. Sometimes it's their family relationships or lack of support. One of the stories that I heard of just this week was a high school student, and her parents were strict, according, you know, to this client, and she was afraid to let them know that she was pregnant. But she did, and her family rallied behind her. I think, you know, as many families will, but the centers are really there for the whole family. And so they can help allay those fears and also let them know what resources are available to them. And I think that is very helpful. And what they find is that all those things that seemed so large and so just overwhelmingly impossible suddenly becomes possible, and they find hope, and they find joy in this new life. And so I think getting them past the fear is what is really needed, and the support that's provided lends itself tremendously to helping them move past their fears.
So would you say it's that being willing to confront that fear that helps women to maybe enter a center, or are there other factors that play into whether women will actually come to a center?
I think sometimes they show up at the center because they want the ultrasound. They know. They also know the services are free. And maybe somewhere inside, they really know that they don't want to do this. And so they're curious. Sometimes they wind up at the centers by mistake. You know, sometimes they went in thinking they were walking into a Planned Parenthood or someplace, an abortion provider. And it turns out they didn't. I think it's interesting that you asked that, Michael, because that is my prayer, is that they will find the courage to walk into the pregnancy support center, because it takes some courage to make that decision, because they don't know what's waiting on the other end. They don't know necessarily that they'll have the support that they need.
And is that the biggest reason why they continue their pregnancies? Because they've got new support, or are there other factors that are involved? Or?
Well, I think, I think one big thing is seeing the ultrasound, because when they see the ultrasound, they actually, now they're thinking baby. Interestingly, there was a study by the Vitae Foundation conducted in 2015. And what they found is that most women in an unintended pregnancy doesn't think of herself as a mother. So she thinks of herself as this problem that has to be dealt with. And as she looks at her choices, interestingly, she thinks that the worst possible choice she can make for her child is to place it for adoption, which is very interesting. But the thinking is that there's no control, that she has no control over what happens to a baby placed for adoption. Whereas with abortion, you know, it's done, and she doesn't have to worry about the future of the child. But when she sees the ultrasound and sees the baby, then she is able to make that connection and sees what her life can be. And that's, I think, one reason why the Vitae Foundation, which specializes in, you know, in marketing, one of the things they say is that, you know, we talk to everyone the same. So no matter, you know, what their religious views are, political views, our message is the same for everyone. And it's really just sharing the beauty of life, sharing the hope. And I think that there's was a commercial done that portrays a woman who was concerned about her life and her future with this unintended pregnancy. And it actually shows her and just thinking that she would be dependent and not have a life of her own. And she's tending to her lawn, raking leaves or something, as she's waving goodbye to her college-bound daughter who's leaving, you know, to show that life went on. She was able to do it. She was able to have a fulfilling life, a fulfilling career, be independent, and still raise her child. I guess in some ways, the message is about empowering women.
Well, one question. So when a woman arrives at a clinic, how is she greeted? What happens?
Yeah. Well, she's greeted with a lot of love, Michael. the process. No, she's not frightened off. You know, she doesn't walk in and immediately, you know, get a hug or so it's very much like walking into a doctor's office. So there's a client intake process and she completes the client intake materials. And then our program has its own client intake form. And so she's told about the program and completes that form too, which includes a survey. So it gives us a little bit of feedback on how things went during her visit. But then she has a pregnancy test. And again, depending on that, the outcome of the pregnancy test, if it's negative, then the client advocate will spend a little bit of time talking with her about lifestyle choices and, you know, asking her what her goals are for her future and how, you know, how her current behavior is either, you know, helping her or maybe placing some obstacles in the way of her reaching her goals for herself. And then the other side is if she has a positive pregnancy test, then they will sit with her in the counseling. We follow a commitment of care and really practice active listening with the client to just try to get a sense of how she feels about this so they know, you know, how to address it with her. Maybe she's delighted. More often, she's overwhelmed and afraid. And so then they began some counseling, you know, with the goal of childbirth and then invite her to come back. And often they do. So it varies from center to center how often a client will come back, but she has that opportunity to come back for counseling or to take classes. And if she takes those classes, she can earn what we call baby bucks. Most of the centers have a boutique. And so she can use those earned baby dollars purchase with the baby bucks, formula, diapers, clothing, and items that she needs for her baby. So it helps her to feel that she's not just getting a handout, but, you know, that she's empowered to provide some things for her baby. Yeah.
Yep. What are some of the classes that a person would be offered, would you say?
So prenatal classes, classes helping her to understand, you know, where she's at in her pregnancy. There's also childbirth classes so she can know what to expect in labor. There are breastfeeding classes. There are classes for dads, which is a really beautiful ministry. Some centers actually have a man cave and they'll have male client advocates who teach the dad classes, which is a great, great witness, you know, for the men who participate. And they also get to earn baby bucks so that they feel that they're in a position to provide some things for their baby that and not simply have a handout. And also one of the things that I think is real important that the centers participate in a program called Count the Kicks. And this is a national program. You might be familiar with it, Michael, but it's a third trimester program and it helps a woman to become aware of her baby's movement. And so it helps if something were to happen, if she were to notice a change, then she could get in immediately with her doctor. And it's helped to save babies in the last trimester. So there's any number of things that they can have classes in nutrition and again, any number of things.
Neat. Well, Rita, as you interact with the people who operate these centers that comprise the network, what do you hear from them that's given you hope as you keep going?
Well, you know, it's those client stories really keep me inspired, but really it's the witness of the client advocates, you know? So this week, you know, I just learned about, you know, the client who's, you know, living in the woods, homeless and pregnant. And it wasn't just the hearing about the client choosing life, but it was really, I was inspired by the volunteers. And, you know, but that they they didn't stop. You know, they went to every, left no stone unturned, so to speak, to get her the help she needed. I'm really inspired by that. I also learned this week of a story of one center called this site manager, their little fairy godmother, guardian angel, that even during COVID, she arrived every day at 5 to disinfect the place. They kept their doors open. They didn't shut. No one at their center got sick. No one, no employee, no volunteer, no client. Everybody managed to stay well, which is pretty miraculous, I think. But just hearing about that dedication to prayer, her coming and, you know, praying through, and I think is what really inspires hope for me. And as you know, nobody gets wealthy, you know, working in a pregnancy center. Most of the people are volunteers. I even know of some executive directors who are volunteers, you know, who are not earning a salary. So no one's doing this, you know, to get wealthy. They're doing it because they're very passionate and they're passionately willing to go to great lengths to help women and their families. And so that's my hope and that's my inspiration. They're my heroes. And I've said that, you know, to them at our statewide training, they are truly frontline heroes.
Rita, just maybe to change gears a little bit, you know, I know that FPCN really is sort of the link to the state of Florida and the Department of Health and ensuring that contractual obligations are met and that kind of thing. And, you know, that appropriation that comes from the state to the network is something that gets debated year in, year out. It's got to be renewed. It's got to be approved. I know that because it's in this vineyard, that's sort of a contested area in our society and the open wound of abortion that we are, you know, continually trying to heal. You know, there are some criticisms that get levied against the network. And maybe, I know you've heard some, you know, what are some of those and that we're likely to hear? And maybe even what are some of the responses, you know, that
sure. Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, Michael, is opponents to the program like to refer to us as fake clinics. And so they'll say things. And in fact, there's even a video online somewhere of a whole series of why we're fake clinics, you know, that a woman will show up and she'll be separated from her purse. Which is, it's just kind of funny because that doesn't happen. You know, we don't say, let me take your purse and please step into this room. I think there's an effort to discredit the network and there's an effort to make women feel afraid. I am aware that some student organizations have actually been encouraged to go online and create fake reviews for pregnancy centers. And so we've encouraged the centers to monitor that and address, you know, what's posted, because typically they know when someone is not a client, an actual client. Anyone who has an open mind, you know, no matter what they think about carrying a pregnancy to term, if they keep an open mind, if they could see what happens in the pregnancy centers, they could see the love, the care, they really couldn't have a problem with us. I mean, during COVID, I know of an executive director, again, volunteer not paid, would show up to distribute goods in the parking lot because people were out of work. They needed diapers. They needed formula. They needed baby food. I know of people who left groceries outside of clients' apartment door during COVID. You know, those things aren't even covered by the program, but this is the level of commitment of these folks. They are truly servants. They are truly, probably many of them would give you the shirt off their own backs. So if folks could really see, you know, with an open mind, they would know these are not fake clinics. These centers are communities where most of them are staffed by women, and the women support each other. The women support the clients that come in. It's a network of support and love and encouragement and empowerment. It's a beautiful thing to witness, and I feel really privileged actually to be a part of it. But we've got, you know, a few of our clinics offer on-site medical services. So many offer the ultrasound, and they have, you know, their licensed certified sonographers on staff. But we have a few with actual medical doctors and nurse practitioners practitioners who are providing services right on site. So I would have to say, if you think we're a fake clinic, just step inside and see what it is we have to offer. If I could, can I tell you one more client story? It's related to wellness.
Sure.
So one of our centers that provides in-house wellness services had a client come in, just a quick about the wellness program. The wellness program is intended for women who are not pregnant, who are not insured, to have a free annual exam. So this woman came in for her annual exam, and there was some suspicion, so they recommended she go for a colposcopy. And she didn't. She comes in 1 year later. And in that interim, that center had a staff member trained to provide the colposcopy. So they knew she couldn't pay, but they did it. And because they suspected that there was cancer, and it turns out there was cancer. And so she was, they worked with an oncologist to treat her, you know, knowing that she had really no means. And she said of that center, they saved my life. And so it's just a beautiful thing. How can you be opposed to that?
I will say that, you know, we have a lot to be thankful for in recent legislatures that have seen fit to establish the program going back to 2005 to continue to fund it and to help to expand the services, really, so that they could offer those wellness services that aren't life-saving. That's really neat. And, you know, just very thankful that the program's continuing, that it's grown, and there's been so much good work to this point. Now, maybe just to shift gears again, you had mentioned that, you know, some of the interesting responses of centers in this pandemic have also mm-hmm. been impressive. You know, pretty much every aspect of society has been affected by the pandemic. Is there anything that stands out in terms of how your network has been affected by the pandemic?
Well, you know, so many of the centers work with volunteers, and lots of those volunteers are 60 plus years of age, and so they're at a greater risk. So many closed their doors completely for a while. Everyone, of course, is open now. But what came throughout all that was is that we explored opportunities to provide services remotely. And so using telehealth and using platforms, they were able to provide face-to-face services with the client, but remotely. And out of that came the opportunity to continue that service. And so our centers have been thrilled to be able to continue that. Some of the clients are still, you know, not comfortable coming in, but for the most part, I think everybody is back up and running. Another thing is, I mentioned the distribution of goods. You know, many of the centers were meeting folks in the parking lots, and they were very quickly improvised to come up with schedules that staggered clients coming in. They would leave things in a basket. The client would come, get it. They sanitize, prep it for the next client. So they had them coming in 15-minute intervals. And that really wasn't covered by the program. But because it happened, we were able to work with the opportunity for what we call boutique services to be added as billable time for the centers so that, you know, so that they could have some reimbursement opportunity. So we would really appreciate that about it's just one of the blessings of COVID. If we have to look for the good outcomes, right?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it sounds like, you know, the challenges posed by the pandemic have been confronted and are being addressed. But as you look to the future too, what are some other challenges that you see for the network?
Sure. Well, Michael, I don't know if you're aware, but since the program started, we have seen 405,000 pregnancy support clients. And we started offering STI or sexually transmitted infection testing along with the Well Woman exams in 2017. And since that time, we have administered 13,000 STI tests, and we've performed 6,000 Well Woman exams. And our challenge now is allowing that to grow. I think when the program first started offering wellness services, everybody was a little unsure and, you know, how's this going to work with our mission as a pregnancy center? And now many are seeing how well it complements the mission of the pregnancy center, because if you can see a client for her preconception health and ensure that she is healthy and well, then she's established a relationship with a pro-life doctor who, should she find herself pregnant in the future, whether the pregnancy was intended or unintended, then she's likely to have a greater outcome for herself and her baby. So we're wanting to grow that. We have several of our centers are kind of waiting in the wings on a wait list because we had to place some limits around our wellness services just because it was growing so quickly. And we want to be faithful to our commitment to pay the doctors and to pay the labs for the lab fees. But that's, I think, one of our challenges.
Well, for listeners who want to be of help to the centers that comprise the network, is what would you suggest they can do? Or
I would say they can support their local pregnancy center. If they're not sure who that is, they can go to our website, which is floridapregnancysupport.com, and choose the locate a center section on the website, and they can put in their zip code and find the center closest to them. And that way they can give of time, talent, or treasure, whatever they're able to do. And so if they're seeking to volunteer, they can find a place close to them. If they want to write a check, they can do that too. And I know that the pregnancy centers are really grateful for any monthly recurring contributions, because with those, they're able to budget and plan a little bit better when they know they can count on a monthly contribution. So I would say those are ways that can help. And also just spread the word, you know, let people know that we're here and that we have this wonderful resource that we're so very blessed and fortunate to have here in the state of Florida.
I understand, Rita, that there is a 3-box method to counseling folks who come into a center to explore options.
Sure, Michael, the 3-box method is a type of options counseling so that the client can receive that objective feedback so that she can make an informed choice. So she's presented with her options and with the consequences of each of those options. And the centers actually literally use boxes. So they'll open up their little boxes. If you choose here, and then they've got little cards or notes with this is what happens in this situation. So she has an idea of what to expect. And that happens with each box. And that is helps in the process of her making her choice.
So the 3 boxes, would one be, you know, carry your child to term, 1 box would be have an abortion, and then there's something else like
choosing to place your child for adoption.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Well, okay. Good.
All right.
Well, Rita, as we get closer to the end here, is there any other thought that you'd like to share with listeners today about the network?
Well, I would say, Michael, and I don't know if it's okay to share this, but I know that the conference is promoting HB 351, which is also SB 744, and that's the bill limiting late-term abortion. And I happened to be in a conversation with someone who was really concerned that limiting the abortion, you know, at 20 weeks would put a woman in a position of carrying a dead baby to term. And so I just wanted to assure her that no one will ever ask someone, a woman, to put her own life and health at risk, you know, or to carry, you know, an unborn baby, you know, that is already deceased to term. And so, again, I think there's that confusion that often surrounds what, you know, the efforts that we try to make on behalf of women and families, that what it does is it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, fear. It's just taps into those fears when they're unfounded. And so I just wanted to say that.
That's really helpful to point that kind of thing out. I think, you know, that is a great theme, you know, that is sort of what drives abortion, whether it's abortion legislation or people to choose abortion. Perceptions are all about, well, what about this? And when the reality is, if you can confront these things, then there's a lot more hope. And it's certainly a better way to proceed. And so I'm glad that people asked you the question. I'm glad you had a good response for it.
Yes. Good.
And, you know, please God, we'll all continue to confront the challenges that arrive in front of us that way. So,
Michael, you know, one thing I didn't mention is that so the program continues to provide services for the client and her child up to the up till the baby's first birthday. And so I think that's important because some people think that, oh, you know, all we want to do is see the baby born and then we're not there to help. And we are, though. The program provides up to the first year, but that doesn't stop the pregnancy centers from providing, you know, up to the second year or third year when a client is in need. So they continue to provide services, but we continue to fund their services up until that first birthday.
That's good. And I know that those educational offerings are going to bear fruit for the life of that family.
I hope so.
Looking forward to it, hopefully. So. Oh, well, good stuff, Rita. Well, thank you for joining for this conversation about the Florida Pregnancy Care Network. Folks, please do feel free to check out that website and see how you can help and learn more about this important work here in Florida, across Florida. Thank you, Rita.
Thank you for having me, Michael. I appreciate it.